Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our mind, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Today, I will share with you a research about the important roles rituals play in reducing our anxiety. And then I'll bring you Omid Nemati. He is the originator of Bevectitude, Mind Theory, and we'll definitely talk about the theory itself. And he is the author of The Human Mind and Patterns of Characters. It's a fascinating conversation. I really hope you enjoy it. I really enjoyed it and learned a lot. Now be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel and Instagram. They're both Dr. Fujian Zain and Twitter Dr. Zain. And I'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
So this week, I've been observing the tremendous amount of anxiety and sadness that people experience within their relationships. Some people experience anxiety about their partner keeping information or emotions from them. Information such as financial, family of origin, or affairs. This makes them feel unsafe and insecure, as if waiting for the other shoe to drop any minute and dismantle their whole life as they knew it. Some people experience sadness for not being seen, not being heard, and alone within their relationship, as if no matter what they say or how they say it, their words will not matter and their needs will not be met. Some people feel broken under the power or the force of their partner and feel utterly powerless within the relationship and powerless to leave the relationship. Some are done with the relationship completely, but feel obligated to remain due to the societal pressure, thinking that it's better for their children, not wanting to be destroyed financially, not wanting to lose the social structure that has been created due to the relationship, or they're afraid of the unknown beyond this relationship. So regardless of the reason that their relationship is not working, their anxiety and sadness creates an unfulfilling life, which results in the demise of their purpose and self-esteem, which will affect productivity in many areas of their life. So how do you take care of yourself when your relationship is not working? One, observe how you're contributing to the current state of your relationship. Two, observe how you think and feel about yourself and your partner in your relationship. Three, identify all of the behaviors, actions that you do in your relationship that you're not very proud of and are not aligned with your intention and values. Next one, see how you have lost respect for yourself and your partner. Explore what your needs are to restore respecting yourself and your partner. See how you have been lying to yourself and your partner. Explore how you can restore trust. Now identify what your needs are and how you can fulfill them with or without your partner. And identify all the areas that you don't have skills yet to create a fulfilling relationship. Remember that you deserve to have an amazing relationship. If you're stuck and don't know and don't have the skills, please get support. We'll be right back with the latest research.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Ceremonies, weddings, funeral, annual parades, and many other gatherings called off. It is apparent that our lives are filled with rituals. In research published in Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society, researchers from University of Connecticut examined the important roles rituals play in reducing our anxiety level. In the current context of the pandemic, if you were a completely irrational being, perhaps an extraterrestrial who's never met any actual humans, you would expect that given the current situation, people wouldn't bother doing things that do not seem crucial to their survival. Maybe they wouldn't really care so much about art and sports or ritual, and they would focus on other things. If you were to think that it would show you didn't know much, if you were really to think, it wouldn't show you that you didn't know much about human nature, because humans care deeply about rituals. Rituals play an important role in people's lives, helping them cope with anxiety and functioning as a mechanism of resilience. Researchers explain that to study something as complex as human behavior, it is important to approach the question from multiple angles to collect converging evidence. First, in a laboratory study, they found that inducing anxiety made people's behavior more ritualized, that is, more repetitive and structured. So the next step was take this research out to real life situation, where they examined whether performing cultural rituals in their natural context indeed helps practitioners cope with anxiety. The researchers induced anxiety by asking participants to prepare a plan for dealing with a natural disaster that would be evaluated by the government experts. This was stressful, as floods and cyclones are very pertinent threats in that context. Following this stress-inducing task, one half of the group performed a familiar religious ritual at the local temple, while the other half were just asked to sit down, relax in a non-religious space. The researchers found that the speech was successful in inducing stress for both groups, but those who performed the religious ritual experienced a greater reduction in both psychological and physiological stress, which was assessed by using wearable technology to measure heart rate variability. Stress itself is important. Stress acts as a motivation that helps us focus on our goals and rise to meet our challenges. Whether those involved studying for an exam, flying a fighter jet, or scoring a game and winning goals, the problem is that beyond a certain threshold, stress ceases to be useful. In fact, it can even be dangerous. Over time, its effect can add up and take a toll on your health, impairing cognitive function, weakening the immune system, and leading to hypertension or cardiovascular disease. This type of stress can be devastating to our normal functioning health and well-being. The mechanism that we think it's operating here is that rituals helps reduce anxiety by providing the brain with a sense of structure, regularity, and predictability. In recent decades, we have begun to realize the brain is not a passive computer, but an active predictive machine, registering information and making predictions to help us survive. We come to expect certain things. Our brain fills in the missing information for the blind spot in our vision and prompts us to anticipate the next word in a sentence. All of these things are due to this effect because our brain makes active predictions about the state of the world. We'll practice rituals like the one included in the study are repetitive and predictable, and therefore, the researchers believe they give our brains the sense of control and structure that we crave. And those feelings help us alleviate stress. The stress-reducing impact of rituals could be a way to cope with chronic anxiety. In today's stressful context, we see rituals taking different forms, from people gathering to applaud healthcare workers, to virtual choirs syncing across the internet. Researchers also notes a recent study that tracked the increase in people's typing prayer in the Google search. In this unpredictable time, people are continuing to find relief in rituals. We as human beings are not as smart as we like to think, but thankfully, we are at least smart enough to be able to outsmart ourselves. We have many ways of doing this. For instance, when we look at ourselves in a mirror before an interview and tell ourselves, okay, I can do this, or when we take a breath to calm down. We have all of these hacks that we can use on our own very brain. We could rationalize it and tell ourselves, okay, I'm gonna lower my heartbeat now. Well, if that doesn't work, rituals is one of those mental technologies that we could use to trick ourselves into doing that. That is what these rituals do. They actually are like life hacks for us. Of course, it is a combination of factors that is why rituals are so powerful, because it combines a number of mechanisms that have to do with the behavior itself, the physical movements, and the cultural context, and the symbolism, and the expectations that go into that behavior. So to be able to disentangle those things, what we are trying to do next is we are examining these factors one at a time. That's what the researcher said. Those rituals have gone through a process of cultural selection, and they're still with us because they fulfill specific functions. They are like life hacks that have been with and have served us well since the dawn of our kind. And we'll be right back with Omid Nebati.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Omid Nemati with me. He is the author of The Human Mind. Actually, it's MIND because it's a mind with two eyes. Human MIND and Patterns of Characters, which takes you through the Avictitude therapy in a storytelling style. Now, he's also the author of MIND Awareness series of 12 books. Welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Dr. Zain, for giving me the opportunity to take part in your show.
As I was reading your bio, Mr. Nemati, what was interesting, I can call you Omid, right?
Yeah.
Can I call you Omid? Okay. Omid, I was looking at your bio, and then I saw you had written that you went from getting an MBA in England, and then you started studying hypnosis at age of 15, and then you kind of went through looking at how to work with trauma, and you created this therapeutic model, although your background is not a psychologist, is not a therapist, and yet you are choosing to go from the business aspect to creating a therapeutic model for the mind, the cognition, the emotion, and releasing trauma. So what got you through exploration of this route, and how come you landed here?
Right. Well, that's a long story, actually. I've always been interested in psychology and philosophy. So as you mentioned, in age 15, I started studying hypnotherapy to become familiar with hypnotism and NLP. So at the time, it was more to attract attention, maybe in age of 15. You know, I was still a teenager and I just wanted to say, oh, okay, I can hypnotize people and I can lock their hands together. And then I went to the uni and started with computer studies. And at the end, I did my postgraduates in business administration and also aviation. So that was my interest also. That continued to year 2012, when I went through a traumatic experience. So as a result, I had post-traumatic stress disorder, which is known as PTSD. At the time, I didn't know what that was. Then I started seeking help and starting reading books and going to therapies and workshops and absolutely anything that that I could see and have kind of built up my hope that that could help. I started studying and going and take part in that. And I became familiarized with cognitive behavior therapy. And then I did schema therapies and studied schema therapies. And I did it all by myself. You know, I didn't go to the university or anything, just from the books and videos and everything like that. And gestalt therapy. Well, hypnotherapy, I already was familiar with. And the Pavlov, Ian Pavlov philosophy. I started studying philosophers' books and try to answer all of these WH questions. And okay, gradually my knowledge built up and I found myself being a psychotherapist, you know, but without any uni certification. And then, okay, I managed to help myself. And at the same time, I thought I'm not the only one who is suffering from PTSD. You could say, I mean, many psychotherapists and philosophers said that actually that everyone can be a victim of PTSD. So you don't necessarily have to have a traumatic event, kind of like a war or a kind of rape to suffer from PTSD. And then I thought that will be very beneficial and helpful for people to have a visualized form of how the happenings inside of mind, human mind. And because I came from, my background was engineering and I was very interested in computer and in the computers industry and also engines, car engines, airplane engines, you know. I actually know how car engine works and I can theoretically repair it. I thought we need something to visualize the happenings, you know, these thoughts, emotions, and feelings. Where are they coming from? What comes and goes? Why do I just, are they randomly come or not? And then I kept writing these questions on the mirrors, windows, walls, floors, so with these marker pens. And at the same time, I was studying. So that was 2012. And then gradually, the idea of Babic Institute came up, and then Pavlov now, and the other components of the MIND model. And in 2019, I'm just trying to zip up all the information, so giving you a summary. In 2019, I managed to finalize the human mind and patterns of characters, the Babic Institute.
So you have created particular vocabulary, which are not necessarily in the English language. You cannot find them in any of the dictionaries. So it's a creation of vocabulary. And so I had this question of how come? Why did you need to create new vocabulary for the concept that you were explaining versus utilizing the vocabulary that was, especially since what you've done, because you are from an international person, where your background is Iranian, you were raised and all of your education were in the United Kingdom, and then you live in the United Emirates. So it's almost like you have a array of vast amount of vocabulary, three languages, which you're really constantly dealing with. And seems like you have brought some of these vocabularies together and created new vocabularies. What enticed you or the need to be able to do that?
Well, it actually goes back to the philosophy of few philosophers. I mean, many of them have the belief that human knows the world by the words that they know. If you know something, if you can grasp something, you have a word for it. So in a way, you could say you cannot think of something if you don't have a word for it. Imagine if like they didn't have it, put a name on iPhone. I mean, what would you call this iPhone? You know, would you every time say, okay, or a smartphone, say, oh, okay, I'm picking up with the phone that has got pictures and does this and that. So they just created a word, smartphone, and defined what smartphone is. And as soon as I say smartphone, just now, I didn't show you smartphone. You do know what I am talking about. So the same scenario happens here. There is a new concept. And as a result of that, I've generated vocabularies and jargons for that these concepts. So they know what I am talking about. So when I say babektitude, after you do the sessions and take my classes or read my book, you would know that I'm talking about human genetic needs and human beliefs. So that's what babektitude is. And then you want to know how our thoughts are formed. Why sometimes I'm thinking of food, sometimes I'm missing my friends, sometimes I'm thinking of money. And then the MIND model goes through that and explain what that is about.
So as we're going to explain the MIND model for our audience, and the MIND model also explains, like you said, where the thoughts and emotions and feelings and how they land into creating those behaviors. So what is the difference, let's say, as you explain the MIND model, than what the theories are already out there, such as the cognitive behavioral model or some of, you know, any of the psychological model that are there? Seems like you've tried to explain it from a different angle. So can you share with us your angle?
Yeah, absolutely. What I realized that the amount of information that we are transmitting is very limited. And we are using our verbal communication, it could be in writing or verbal communication, to transmit some information from my mind to your mind, okay? And this limitation in the MIND model is what is happening in pool of now. So everything that is happening in the current moment is happening in the pool of now, in the MIND model.
And pool of now, you mean pool of now, you mean the present moment?
Exactly. The present moment is pool of now. So all of our thoughts, emotions, feelings, and characters and patterns of characters are happening in the pool of now. As soon as a fraction of a second passes, it's not in the pool of now anymore, it's in the memory. So the beginning of our show, our interview, is not in our pool of now anymore, it's in our memory. So pool of now content changes continuously and very rapidly. But the capacity of pool of now is very limited. So the amount of information that we can deal with in the pool, in the pool of now is very limited. So I thought if somehow we can zip up these information. So you asked me about the difference in, for example, cognitive behavior therapy to Babek Tattoo therapy. In cognitive behavior therapy, you sit and talk, you know, use verbal communication. But by visualizing some concepts, which are the formations of our thoughts, emotions, and feelings, which are linked to our beliefs and our human needs, our genetic needs. If somehow we can zip up like the zip file in computer Windows and visualize it, we can have more information accommodated in the pool of now. As a result, we can get to some conclusion and some visions that with verbal or written communication, we would not have that ability.
So you're saying that we could have access to the visual component within the here and now, and in order to have more information so that we could, let's say, make this better decisions or create behaviors that are, you know, encompass as more, most of us, most of the who we are into that decision making and action. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. So then how do you access those visual information, and how do you bring one, how do you access them? Two, how do you bring them into the present moment, as you call them, the pool of now?
Okay, great. So visualizing and these new vocabularies, the jargons, are two of the major tools which gives you that ability. So instead of thoughts, you say patterns of characters. Okay, in 24 hours, we make from 60 to 80,000 thoughts. Okay, so you can zip them up by characters. So name them, label them. What type of thoughts? What kind of thoughts? What sort of the thoughts? The classification, the profile. What's this, the stamp of these thoughts? Is it my logical character? Is it my angry character? Is it my kind character? Is it my selfish character? Is it my egoistic character?
And
my hungry character? All of these are characters. These are actually the stamp of our thoughts.
And the characters are a combination of thoughts, beliefs, emotions, and physiological chemical presentations and let's say body reactions and body languages and behaviors. This is all comes in, like, for example, if I have an angry yes. character, it seems like it has to have a specific thought process or belief system, emotions, then the emotion shows up in my body. So obviously I have a certain chemical reaction that shows up, and then I will have a physical reaction to it, so other people will really see that I am angry, and then there's a behavior that shows up. So will all of this be on the network of that character at that moment?
It's very surprising that you actually said a lot of things that I was going to come to. That's right. However, we get into more details, and we actually again go to more divisions. So we have our characters, which are our thoughts, and you talked about our emotions and feelings separately are pumped up on our stage of now. Stage of now, I haven't spoken about stage of now yet, but stage of now is the interpretation of pool of now. Pool of now is the place where the experts are dealing with. But stage of now is the interpretation of pool of now. So on stage of now, anyone can watch it, look at it, and understand, from someone aged 10 all the way to someone who is, I don't know, over 100 years old. So the character play, they act on the stage of now. And as a result, emotions and feelings are pumped on the stage of now. So when your anger character is acting on your stage of now, relevant emotions and feelings are pumped. Or when your client character is acting, you will have different emotions and feelings. And regarding the chemicals, they separately are shown on the indicator panels. So on the stage of now, if in my book, you look at the mind model, you will see the stage of now. The walls of this stage of now, where the acts and plays are played in the current moment, you can see the indicator panels, which shows your heart rate, your breathing system, your tension, all the chemicals, endorphin, whatever you can think of, even the things that are not discovered yet, they will have the place allocated on the indicator panels on the stage of now. So maybe I'm not alive, but when it's discovered, that's the place to sit. So we have a shelf set up for those things already on the stage of now in the mind model.
It's interesting, as you're talking to me, I keep thinking about the animation In and Out, and I keep thinking that your book should become an animation like that. Because for everyone who's watching us, listening to us, this book has all illustration and is done in a storytelling to explain. And that's what Omid is trying to explain to you as he's utilizing the pool of now, the stage of now, what the characters are. These are all in the illustration, and it's done in a storytelling way so that it really hits home in all the different levels of conscious and subconscious for you guys. But as you were talking, I'm like, dude, you've got to put this in animation, in television and theater, because you're bringing it into a level of a play. There's definitely a play happening here where visually you can see in what's going on. All right, back to the scientific aspect of it, beyond my imagination. All right, so we have characters that come alive in us because throughout our history, our time, we have captured different roles that have suited us, let's say. For example, if I have an angry character, that means I've been utilizing this part of me a lot, and that's how it has actually created a character of its own. We call it like maybe sub-personalities in a sense, because it each one of them has it, all of its component. And what I got from you is that they're like empty dolls, which are actually sitting on a shelf until they come to the pool of now and until they come to the present moment, which I need to use them. So what I do is I bring them back, and the minute I bring them back is almost I turn it on as a doll that it turns on. And then all of those components start showing up, which are the emotions and the physical reactions, and all of it becomes part of the now to do whatever it's strategically it's supposed to do at that moment, to take care of me, to, you know, act a particular way, to whatever the reason or the intention is at that moment, that I bring that part of my character right out. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. You are actually talking two things you mentioned about my book, which the first part you said, kind of like making animation, that's actually mentioned in the book. Once this concept of mind model and Babak Digital Therapy is delivered in the form of animations, books, and movies, then it will cover a wider range of people and it can help more people. That actually said in the book, and it's funny that you just said it. And the second part, you are talking about directing character. So in the book, you have kind of like advent of observing character. So the actual person, there is a human character in the book called Yita. Yita is the actual person. And then the characters who act on his stage of now have different names, like Victimita is his victim character. And then after Victimita, Logikita come and does, we have a chapter section in the chapter called Speech of Logikita. So, and then we've got observing character, which is called Observita. And then after that, we have Directorita. So you are talking about you mentioned a range of characters, and then you spoke about the directing character. So directing character is who decides who come and act. So if you are observing your stage of now, if you know which character is playing, if you have a name, you should have a stamp and profile. This character is like a Facebook profile, has got a face, has got a picture. You know what the triggers are. Your victim character might be sensitive to some words, some smells, some sights, some pictures. So these are the triggers and favorite friends, the dialogues that he's engaged in. So you know which character, you should know which character is playing and what is the trigger and what is the dialogue. If you know that, your directing character knows what to do to make that character go away. So if it's a victim character, your directing character knows how to do it. If it's your client character.
At this point, obviously all of us have created some characters that work for us. So most of us are doing this automatic. So part of the work that you are offering in the MIND awareness group is how to even become aware of these characters that you've created, because you cannot really direct. You cannot be an amazing director if you don't know what each role is playing and when to use them and when they're being used and it's not appropriate. So another part of your book and your model is how to let people know to become aware of all of their characters. Then they can, after they learn them, they become aware of them, they can put them in the shelf or the zip file that you're talking about, right?
Exactly, absolutely. So once, if you are a director, you can direct it better if you are looking actually where the acts are played.
And the acts are played actually in the here and now, in the pool of now, because that's the only place you can observe them, really.
That's the most important thing that a human can have, pool of now, stage of now. The past is in the memory, and future is in your imagination cloud, which is one of the things that is explained on the stage of now. Stage of now has got different parts. So whenever that you are thinking about something, the place is on the imagination cloud. And the character that brings that up is called Imaginator. So imagine is the beginning of the name. You could, for example, for you, it could be imagining Dr. Zaini. For in this book, Imaginator, Victimator, Logicator. So these imaginations, you know, when you know that Imaginator is putting it up, your observing character would know that is imagination. So if that's a tragedy on your imagination cloud, then it's less likely that your anger character comes and acts, because your observing character is watching it.
So there's this part of the awareness part that you explained very well, and then look in that. And then you also talked about how this model also clears trauma or deals with trauma in one way or another. So can you also share how actually this model then attends to trauma? Because attending to a trauma not only has to be able to be handled in the present moment, but most people, the reason they got traumatized is because they're here and now, present moment, as they're getting overwhelmed by all that's happening to them, they're not able to manage the high level of emotion. And part of why they need to dissociate from it, disconnect from it, and kind of put it aside so that they can survive the moment, and then that whatever they've set aside then has to be dealt with when their system, their body system, is a little bit more into the space of relaxed, where they can actually go and pick that up and then handle it again. While when they're in their hypervigilant state and they have to survive, they cannot handle all that's happening. So, and not only the awareness is important, but the memory retrieval is important. And then what do you do in the trauma handling, let's say, or I'll just call it trauma handling at that point.
Yeah. You actually brought up so many topics, and I don't know which one to start with, but I'll start, and then if I do not manage to finish it, then you have to give me one more session maybe. So you mentioned, okay, one of the things that you mentioned about the healing, okay, let's start with the limitation. I bring your attention to the limitation of pull of now. So now you are hearing my voice, and at the same time, you are seeing other things. Further back on your stage of now, you are thinking of what some characters are talking about, what you are going to do next after this show, after this interview. So all of these thoughts, which are the plays of your characters, are using the capacity of your pool of now. So as a result, when you are using 80% of the ability of your pool of now, then you have only 20% to kind of like deal with, kind of managing your directing character would have less facilities, less mint operating fuel, which I will explain later, to convert to directing character and as a result manage to direct the place. That's what happens. And it is very well visualized and explained in the mind model and Babak Tichu therapy, that brings the attention that, okay, you are limited. If, for example, you are driving and suddenly you become close to a car accident, then you wouldn't be able to have your observing character put up and observe your stage of now and direct it. Because a lot of that are handled by your conditionings, which in Babak Tichu therapy is called mind autopilot system. Your mind autopilot system is running the happenings on your stage of now. And your observing character and directing character has got the ability to direct a very limited segmentation of a stage of now. That's what happens. So that one thing that you brought up. So the other things also, again, related to that, observing our stage of now and directing are doing by thoughts, which is very powerful, but it cannot always win against conditionings. That's a very complicated conditioning. Which are a very, very major component of post-traumatic stress disorder, or happens like learning. When you learn how to drive, then it's very difficult to unlearn that. Or if you learn how to play violin, how to play piano, then it's very difficult to unlearn that. Post-traumatic stress disorder can be compared in many ways with learning. Once your mind autopilot system learns that, okay, that person is dangerous, or that situation is dangerous because that's what you learned in the accident, in that traumatic event, then it's very difficult to kind of like delete it. In workshops and in a machine which I designed, but I've never managed to actually make it because it's going to be very expensive and complicated to make it. That could be healed, but that's the most challenging part, which many people never manage to get rid of this conditioning in their lifetime. So they need to learn how to live with it, and how to make the best play on the stage of now, which can be a better and more desirable play, rather than try to fight with that kind of character, the victim character who keeps coming and showing up on the stage of now. And a lot of time, thoughts cannot win against emotions. When emotion comes, you cannot think logically and say, okay, I'm observing my stage of now and my director character. No, the victim character comes and you have to give it the chance to do his act or her act and go. and at the same time try to reconstruct the construction and the formation of your Bhavikchitra trees where the conditionings and educations are stored. So hopefully, after a few years, you will have less performance of this victim character.
What shows up for me is that although you're very accurate about the conditioning that is happening, is that first, I think that we shut down behavior in the pool of now. As I'm talking, trying to also bring what I know into your model and take from your model as we're kind of integrating this. It seems like the behavior has to stop, so the action needs to stop before there can be actually an awareness of what's going on and then shifting. So the first part would be to stop acting, stop talking, stop doing anything, so that you could be aware of that conditioning for a minute, or we might even become aware of that conditioning is present in the pool of now or the stage of now that you're talking about by recognizing that that's happening, and then stop the act, and then be able to like shift to another maybe character that we've redesigned or created, so that we ask the other character to show up and play the role versus this one going back until, you know, all of these machinery technology that are getting created come in, and, you know, the world of cognitive sciences with the technology are going to take us to completely other places, I'm assuming, within the next 10 years. Because I'm privy to getting presentations from amazing companies with amazing technologies that are bringing to change the brainwaves. And, you know, there was one that I was listening to that they'll take the brainwave and they'll return your own brainwave to you through the music. And, you know, the brain balances itself. And through that balance, let's go of the trauma that has gotten created. So I'm sure within the next 10 years, we will have a lot of electronic devices that will support us in changing the physiology of our body as it got caught into some of these conditioning or traumas. But at this point where that's not available yet, I'm necessarily kind of based on what I know on my own model and the field, and what I'm hearing from you at this point is recognizing the awareness of those characters, the physiology of it, the conditioning of it, the awareness and the stopping and reshifting at this point is the best that we could do. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's absolutely. I've read your book, Life Reset, and just to let you know, I read your book after I finished my book, so I didn't steal any idea from your book.
I know when I sent it to you, it was after you actually sent me the book, so absolutely.
So in your book, you mentioned younger you. So what I loved it. And then you are if I remember it right, you are going through the beliefs and the behavioral scales, which in my book is called of that person, in seven areas of life. Am I correct? There were seven areas. How do you choose your friends? What does love mean to you? So you are actually talking about the Bhavikchitra trees. And you are trying to change the formation of the Bhavikchitra by your techniques, which you explained very nicely. I mean, I absolutely couldn't find anything in your book that I say, okay, I disagree with this point. That was brilliant. And these are the facilities that we have until this new technology comes up that does something that is very different. And a lot of time, they make a mess. You know, they are not always brilliant. So it takes there is a very long time. I mean, I might not be alive to see those technologies. I hope I am, but you know, so it takes time. I mean, in 10 years' time is a good estimation that a lot of things comes up, but to come to perfection, it takes another, I don't know how many years it will take. Yeah. I hope it comes soon. So absolutely, you are talking about absolutely the same thing. But I've been trying to, actually, I've noticed a bit of hypnotherapy techniques, I mean, in your book, cognitive behavior therapy and hypnotherapy, in a way, the way that you talk to your clients. Am I right? I mean,
yes, what I've taken, you know, on a philosophical level, I think there's an aspect of the philosophical, there's also aspect of the actual intervention. So in a philosophical, it's existential, humanistic, it has the cognitive behavior, it has the emotional aspect of it and physical. But on an intervention, there is a particular place where you are kind of surfing in the memory lane to go and find out where these belief systems have shown up, which, you know, you decided that, and the minute you decided, your whole system went into creating that character, for example, as you call it, the character that it is. It's my understanding has been through the trauma work that I've done a lot, is that usually there's a decision that is made that makes it a character. So it's not just emotions coming and going. It's not just thoughts coming and going. Like you said, we have those constantly all day. But how come suddenly they become a clump? How come suddenly they become a character? And to me, the reason we create, you know, personas or characters, it's because there's a belief system that gets created at that moment, that belief system becomes somehow useful as either a strategy or a survival useful concept, as a coping mechanism, whatever, you know, at that moment we say it is, then that gets kind of like, you know, all frozen up into one character. And then when we bring it, it all shows up with all of it. It shows up with the thoughts, with the emotions, with the physiological aspect of it. And to me, the doorway to opening this vault up was to look at, and I got that also, you know, from the conversations of eye movement desensitization and reprocessing from Francine Shapiro, where you really needed to have the element of the thought process, the emotion, where is it in the body, and then allowing to go into that memory and clinging, you know, opening it up. So I was bringing a lot of these models that I learned and I practiced in my practice for the past 30 years and bringing them together. And I can see, you know, and our time is about up in 1 minute. I also saw that as I was going through your book and talking to you about your model, about how this, the same conversations that we're having, like, where is the thought? How do you become aware of them? How do you look at where these roles are? How do you, after becoming aware of them, do you see them useful or not, and having the ability to direct them? And then part of that is even with the trauma, how do you direct how the trauma shows up as one of these characters? Because if the trauma is there, it also holds itself, and then it turns itself to maybe multiple characters, because we need to survive. So we create coping mechanisms based on that, then it just becomes intrigued in our system. For last minute, what would you like to share with our audience about your book, and where can they find them?
Well, there are many things I want to mention, actually. I don't know which one to say, but to cut the long story short, this book is actually using many techniques. So you could have AI model, AI-based Bavectitude therapy. So you could do your Bavectitude, your model, using the MIND model, and work on people's beliefs and conditioning by reconstructing the Bavectitude. So that's how it works. It's not completely kind of like a separate and kind of unique therapy. If you are a psychotherapist, if you are cognitive behavior therapist, gestalt therapist, or schema therapist, you still can use the MIND model to visualize the happenings of human mind. And it gives you the ability to facilitate and increase the quality and speed of your communication. And my book can be, if you search Bavectitude, Google Bavectitude, or The Human Mind, The Human Mind, MIND, my book will come up. You know, I mean, it's available on Amazon and many of other bookstores, you know. I mean,
all right, so
Amazon doesn't ship to many countries. So depends on where you are located. You could Google up Bavectitude. I spell it for you. It's BAVECTTITUD. If you Google Bavectitude, it comes up, you know.
And do you have a website yourself?
There are a few websites where the informations are stored. If you Google up Bavectitude, they will come up, but I don't want to give out the URL because I haven't decided which one I am going to use as my main one. There is BEFZ.com, Bavectitude.com, but if you just Google Bavectitude, that should come up, you know. And once I decide which one is going to be the main one, I will mention that this is the main website for Bavectitude therapy.
Beautiful. For everyone, please check Omid Nemati of Human Mind, M-I-I-N-D, there's two I's, M-I-I-N-D, Human Mind and Patterns Character. And to know more about the Bavectitude, B as in boy, A, V as in Victor, E, C as in cat, T-T-I-T-U-D-E. Check him out. I think the book is awesome. It's amazing. It has a lot of, it's a storytelling about your mind and how it works. And I think that you will all enjoy the book and the model. Thank you so much, Mr. Nemati, to accept my invitation to be on my show. And hopefully more and more, and hopefully we'll see your animation all over the world.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure to be with you.
And for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Bye-bye.